This is 43 Folders. I'm Merlin. This special episode of the podcast features the audio from a tech talk that I presented at Google on July 23rd, 2007. The subject of the talk was Inbox Zero, and it's based on a series of 43 Folders articles on how to tackle a high volume of email and spend more time doing the stuff that really matters to you. I want to extend special thanks to Dick Wall for setting up the talk and to Chris Ulbrich for kindly granting permission to republish the audio here. The presentation begins with an introduction by Dick, and it runs for about 30 minutes. It's followed by about 25 minutes of question and answer with Google employees. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the talk.
Hello. Okay. Just a quick note. If you can't find seats here, there is an overspill room for this one. It's Tunis, I believe, is the overspill here on campus. So if you need somewhere else to watch this from, that's the place. When it comes to superheroes, I've always been more of a Spider-Man than a Superman fan, personally, and I'll come back to that reference in a minute. Today, it's my great pleasure to introduce Merlin Mann, who I've read and followed for many years. He's the creator of 43 Folders website. Also, slightly less well-known but very good is his Fives website. That's a really good one if you haven't checked that out. And he's got a number of other projects, including MacBreak Weekly, regular on the Twit podcasting network, and so forth. So I mentioned Spider-Man. Merlin's a little like Spider-Man to me. Spider-Man is this kind of really cool superhero with all these powers, but occasionally he swings into buildings or has to wash his own underwear. And to me, that makes that character much more accessible. And when it comes to getting things done, I feel the same way about Merlin's advice. He swings into the occasional building or, occasionally deals with the day-to-day issues of washing your own underwear. And to me, that advice just makes a lot more sense. So with that said, Merlin Mann.
Thank you very much. Looking good with this guy here. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, if I worked at Google, I'd have other people that could wash my underwear for me. So 3, 4. You guys get laundry, I don't know if you know. Maybe that's just some of the people that have been here for a while. Yeah? They don't pick it up for you? Yeah? Dry cleaning, though, they'll do that. Yeah, I was ragging my friend about this the other day. Oh, God, you work at a place that you're so infantilized, they do your laundry for you. He's like, yeah, but I pay for it. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, still, it's pretty good. Thanks a lot for having me here today. I'm going to talk about email and something that I call Inbox Zero. It's based on a series of articles that I wrote for 43 Folders a while back, a year or two ago, and has a lot to do with my own struggles over the years to deal with high volumes of email. 1993, I got my first email account. It's a Pine account on the Tallahassee Freenet. This is a wonderful thing. You get a free internet account, you get a shell account. Anybody in town could get it. Look up The Simpsons on Gopher Holes till 2 a.m. It was amazing. And it blew my mind. I mean, I'd used Microsoft Mail before. I had never had internet email, and it was astonishing. I knew probably maybe a dozen people that had email addresses, mostly people who were like in grad school. I had a friend that was going to Oxford. I could email this guy, I could write him a letter. It would get there immediately, and then he'd write me back. I mean, I know a lot of you are younger than me, but this was astonishing. This was mind-blowing. I mean, the sense of like connecting with people. People you hadn't seen in forever, you find out they got an email address, and all of a sudden you're emailing. It's email, you gotta have the email. It was fantastic, it was unbelievable. And like every little email I wrote was like a special little letter. It was like I was getting a little hug from somebody, and I was returning it with a little hug. A dozen people in a little network, international network of hugs. And it felt so awesome. And it kind of stayed that way for like probably almost 2 years. It like remained astonishing to me that I had email. It still kind of freaks me out a little. Didn't always stay that way. Eventually, more than a dozen people found out what my email address was. I suspect people more than that know yours as well. And somewhere along the way, email went from being kind of this funny, hip thing that you did with your geek friends into being the lingua franca for how you dealt with your entire life. And it became kind of the one source for all incoming and outgoing information. And it started to get a lot harder. And all of a sudden, the messages became a little bit less like careful letters and became more like, I don't know, like an avalanche falling on your head every morning. And it became a lot less fun. And it became a lot less about a network of hugs. And that made me sad. In 1993, I didn't need a system for doing email. The system was I logged in and I tried to remember the commands for doing things in Pine, and I got my email. And that was all there was to it. To have a system for doing email with a dozen people in the network seemed kind of crazy and anal. Why would I need that? And yet today I feel like the only way you're going to succeed at a job, one of the most important soft skills you can have, is figuring out how to deal with a high volume of email. And the only way that you're going to do that is to be able to put some kind of a system into place that's going to be simple and repeatable, and is going to allow you to have an actual life outside of email. It actually can happen, believe it or not. I think this does have to be a very simple system. It has to be a relatively complete framework that, regardless of who the message is from or what kind of content type it is, you know how to deal with everything that comes into your world. You're reducing the number of possible options for what something could be and turning it into a relatively small number of verbs for what you can actually do with any of this stuff. I think one of the most important things an email system can do is to build walls where they don't yet exist. A lot of people right now are, for practical purposes, living in their inbox. They leave their email open all day long. It's auto-checking throughout the day. Little blips come up about every minute. And email becomes the nexus for everything they do with work. They use it as a to-do list manager. They use it as a calendar. I'm not talking about Outlook. I'm talking about people who literally scroll through their inbox to decide what meetings they have to go through today. To quote Walter Sobchak, you're entering a world of pain. That is not a way to live. That's not a system. That's crazy. Those edges are so important because you guys are knowledge workers, which is a fancy way of saying you add value to information. And if you're a knowledge worker, the two most precious natural resources you've got are your time and your attention. They're both finite, and they're both irreplaceable. There's no way you're ever going to add a couple hours to the day. And as much as you Emacs people probably think it's possible, you can't actually do 17 things at one time. Multitasking, in my experience, tends to be something of a myth. Where you decide to put your time and attention says a lot about who you are. It says a lot about you as a human being. You have some idea in your head of all the stuff that's high priority to you, right? All the stuff that really matters. If I sat down and ask you, what's really important to you? You go, oh, my family and my church group, and I'm a deacon. But then I go and I look in your email box and your news feeds and your web browser. If I went and I got all CSI on that, what would the last 2 weeks of your electronic life say about how it maps to the stuff that you claim is really important? Maybe really well, in which case you should leave. But if you're like me and you struggle with that, you need to have these walls and you need to find ways to honor where your time and attention go. And there's probably no better way to have your time burgled than by not having a healthy relationship with your email and not having a sense of where stuff belongs. As much as your time and your attention are finite, the demands on your time and attention are infinite. There's no end to how much people can ask of your time and your attention. You're ultimately the one who's going to have to make decisions about how your attention and your time map to the things that you actually do, the actions in your life. There's a really a good writer and developer named Joel Spolsky. You probably know him from Joel on Software. And he uses an example that I like a lot that I'm going to steal. He says that whether you're developing software or what have you, it's good to think about the amount of available time and effort as representing a box. And that's a box that's got a certain number of cubic inches available in it, and you can put whatever you want into it. But every kind of task that you want to add to that box is basically like a little block. Big tasks are big blocks, and little tasks are little blocks. But no matter how you cut them up, there's still only so many cubic inches in the box. The fact of the matter is it's all about opportunity cost. Every time you put a crap block into your box, it means a really cool block doesn't get to go in there. And as much as we sometimes feel like we're beholden to bosses and teams, we're ultimately the traffic cop for this kind of stuff. So one idea behind this is obviously kind of a more general point, but I think it really keys to the idea of inbox zero, because it's a way of saying that ultimately you want to not have to worry about taking stupid blocks out of the box. Better to make sure they never get in there in the first place. And that requires a very kind of proactive approach to managing the action in your life. And that's really what this is all about. If you're managing actions, you're ensuring that your time and attention are always mapping to the stuff that you claim is important. And as heretical as this might sound, it also means you could spend less time doing email and discover that there are things outside the world of email that are also your job and your life. It's true, I promise. Inbox Zero has a lot of prior art. In particular, I'm taking a lot of these ideas from David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. a lot of other stuff. Show hands, getting things done, people. Anybody read it? Yeah. In particular, a lot of the ideas around processing. If you're familiar with GTD, it's going to have a lot to do with this. David Allen has a phrase that he uses in Getting Things Done that I like a lot. He calls getting things done advanced common sense. And I think that's exactly what a lot of this stuff is. The stuff that I'm going to talk to you about today could not be any more obvious. The trouble is we don't always do the obvious things. And so putting them into some kind of framework that you can get your head around can be a great way to keep things on the rails. So the idea behind Inbox Zero, first of all, we admit to ourselves that email is really nothing more than a medium. It is, as Senator Stevens might say, it's a tube. It gets things from one place to another. And I think that's really critically important. There's no need for you to live in email. There's no need for you to be there. That's not where the action is, right? Email's swell. It's great for getting stuff around. But you don't want to be focusing exclusively on the email itself to the exclusion of the other things that are in the email that need to be liberated into other places, like appointments and tasks and reference materials. I really believe there's a single place for anything. That's going to differ for each one of us. We're all going to have our own idea about what that right place is. But once you know where stuff goes, it gets a lot easier to figure out where to put it. And having an idea in your head about where stuff needs to land and where it could potentially live forever, that's your job to figure out. The single practice that I think could really change your life starting today is to process to zero. Process to zero every time you check your email. You never check your email without processing. Which I know sounds, again, heretical. But a lot of people get really good at checking email, and they don't always get so good at doing anything about it. So we're going to show you how to do processing. But you're never going to have an overfull inbox if you can get out of the habit of allowing that stuff to kind of stack up in the first place. And that begins with processing every time you check. And finally, it's an action-based system, kids. This is all about converting stuff into action. Even if that action means deleting the email, it's about deciding in the moment what you need to do about it and then moving on. Processing is probably the most important piece of that in terms of how this is going to be affecting you from day to day. I think one of the problems is that a lot of people, especially kind of the BlackBerry kids, think that checking is enough. I'm going to check my email. Got to go. Check my email. Well, you know, if you check something, and theoretically you're doing that, so what? Because there's a fire in there that might be coming up? Okay, well, you checked it and there's no fire. But there's also five other emails that you haven't done anything with. Well, you know, checking brings with it a certain amount of responsibility. If you're checking on your friend's cat while they're out of town, it's incumbent upon you to tell them if anything goes wrong with the cat. If you're checking on Monday and the cat's fine, checking on Tuesday, the cat's fine. Checking on Wednesday, it's spontaneously combusted. You don't just come back on Thursday and hope that it got better. You've checked on the cat and there's a problem and now you deal with it. Don't let your BlackBerry turn into exploding cats. That's not a good thing. But yet at the same time, the good news is that it means less than responding, right? There's more than checking, less than responding. Responding is one possible outcome of processing, but it's not the only one. That's 1993 talking. Every time you think, every email you get needs a response. I know most of you probably aren't in that place, but somewhere search your mind and see if there's maybe some little corner that still thinks, oh man, I gotta respond to 200 emails. And you don't. You gotta process 200 emails, which is so different. At the end of the day, processing means that you're going to look at every single piece of email in your inbox and decide what it means to you. Where does this go? Or, germane to our point, what actions do I have to take as a result of this email? Think of yourself as like a miner. You're an information miner, an action miner. There's little veins of gold, and probably fool's gold in some cases, in your email. And it's your job to go figure out what that is. And that's kind of what the processing is all about. I have this idea that if you work in a deli and you're behind the counter, people keep bringing you orders. A lot of people I know would think, these orders are really interesting. I should check to see if I have any new orders. Five more orders. Okay. Yeah. I get any new orders? Oh, yeah, I got a couple more orders. I wonder how should I organize these? Should I alphabetical or maybe numerical? No, you're making sandwiches. You're not stacking. The whole point of this is to go make a damn sandwich. You know, if you just sat around all day trying to figure out, are there any new orders? That's not the point. Focus on putting out the sandwiches and don't worry so much about the orders. Once you've mined the gold out of your email, it's a dead skeletal husk and you can throw it away. When you're processing, the idea is to liberate all of that stuff and be done and throwing the husk away as quickly as possible. Don't cling in this like sad like Buddhist way to your email in this like weird CYA, you know, anxiety fest. You just, you know, move it on, get it out of the way as quickly as you can, get it off your plate. Now, the way we're going to do this is through a limited number of options for what you can do with a given email. This is my system. This is what works for me. Okay, so your N number here might be different. But for the way I do this, there's five potential things that can happen to any email. Five and only five verbs that tell me everything I can do with an email. Why is this a good thing? Well, like right now, just think to yourself, imagine your inbox. Is there any email in your inbox right now that you've read but you haven't done anything about? Maybe a couple of you. Chances are, because you haven't really thought about what the possible verbs are. And it's weirdly comforting once you know what those verbs are for yourself in your own little system. It can be weirdly comforting to be able to just blow through that stuff. Oh gosh, you should delete so much of your email. It's just unbelievable how much email you can delete or archive. These are kind of roughly, I'm going to use my laser pointer. These are kind of roughly in the order of desirability just for the way I think about this stuff. But if I can delete an email, boy, I'm for damn sure going to delete it. I'm going to get it out of there. The default state of your inbox should probably not be keep sitting here until I start weeping. That's not a good approach. If you find yourself with the little scroll wheel going up and down while tears run down your face, like something's not working. And so, can you delete it? Okay, delete it. That's great. Is this something where this would really be better for somebody else to do? You can delegate it to somebody else. That could be delegated horizontally or vertically. It just means somebody else is going to work on it. If it's an email that you can respond to very quickly, just blow out a 1-2-3 line response in 1 or 2 minutes. Keep moving. Keep the ball in motion. It might be something that you want to defer. This can be a tricky one. But if it's something where you need to respond to this, but it's going to take a little bit of outside work, it's still primarily an email-based task, you might want to kind of put that aside to do for later on. And then finally, if it's something you can do, go do it now and be done with it, right? Advanced common sense, yes, I will give you that. But if you can find out what your little verbs are and then make sure that you're always doing them, you're never going to have that stuff stacking up in your inbox again, because you know there's only so many outcomes, and it's just a matter of you, as quickly as possible, determining which one of those outcomes it is and then dispensing it as quick as you can. Let's talk about each in just a little bit more detail. I include archiving and deleting, and I'll explain why in a minute. But obviously, you know, if it's urban myths from your aunt, if it's, you know, Viagra ads or whatnot, you know to junk that. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you get that you can also junk. Once you get really good and fast at this stuff, it's going to blow your mind how much of your email you throw away, once you kind of lose the fear. But anything that doesn't have any place in your life and never will, get rid of. That said, if there is stuff that you will need in the future, archive it. And what is archiving? Archiving, for me, is a single folder. It's a single folder called archive. It's not 24 folders, friend. It's not coming up with the most crazy Byzantine taxonomically complete system that you can think of. Because be honest, for those of you who do have the 24-folder Byzantine system, when's the last time you used it to actually find anything? Maybe you do. Maybe you use it all the time. You, sir, will win a prize. But for most of you, I've seen you. You sit there and you go, well, is this... This is going to be definitely 2007, July, blog-related. Is it blog-related or CMS? Really, it's more like my Ruby Ultimate Golf group. Really, it should go here. But I'll tag it and duplicate it. Dude, it's the modern age. You got the frickin' Gmail. Search for it. Flag it. If you need to flag it and put it into a folder, that's great. But ask yourself, and I will grant you, some of you need this structure because you're crazy. But but be honest with yourself. What is the payoff? Are you getting, for the amount of time that you, I'm on a Mac, I grab an email and I start dragging it. I have to start thinking now. Where does this go? For an email that I'm going to archive, I got to think about where it goes. I'm not a librarian. I have a blog. Like, it all goes into archive. Ask yourself, what is the minimally Byzantine system that you can tolerate that will still allow you to find stuff later on? It does not need to be taxonomically satisfying. It needs to be easy to find. There's a really big difference. But delete whatever you can and just try to keep it simple. Delegating is kind of a no-brainer. You're forwarding it usually to somebody and you're saying, hey, I think, can you give this person this information or what have you? The only addition I would add to that, there's another action associated with that, especially if you do GTD, which is the idea of having a follow-up. So If you want to be proactive about this stuff, I've used that twice, so I need to put a dollar in the jar now. If you want to be proactive about this, if you want to drill down net-net, open the kimono. seriously, friend DA, if you want to, if you're going to delegate to somebody, it's a good idea to give yourself a little tickler and say, okay, in 2 weeks, give yourself a reminder to make sure it happened. Everybody's got a different way they handle this. I have a, I use OmniFocus is the program I use, and I have a little context in there called Waiting On, where I can watch stuff. Sometimes I'll put things on a calendar. But I think it's a good idea to, whenever you can, start getting in this this mindset of converting things into actions. It's not always just somebody else's job. And then just kind of get it out of the way as quick as you can. Quick responses. I'm guessing this is probably a huge amount of what you get. I know you kids are on a lot of the email lists. You get a lot of stuff through the day you're participating in. Learning to blow out a really fast, like one or two line reply is such a ninja move. There's a website that started in the last week or two called Five Sentences. I don't know if you guys have seen this. There's five sentences, four sentences, three sentences, and two sentences. And they're a Spanish site, so they end in .es, five sentences. And it's kind of funny. And it's a way of saying to people, I have undertaken it that from now on, no email I ever write will be longer than five sentences. And so you put it in your footer of your emails. And people know that you're not being terse, you're being efficient. Maybe you're being terse. Maybe you're from New England and you're just naturally taciturn. But get it out as quick as you can. I want to come up with some kind of fancy computer term for this, but there's got to be some phrase for like the disproportionate way that, how many times have you gotten something usually from over your pay grade where somebody sends you a one-line email that represents a month of work for you? There's a terribly disproportionate thing going on in email. And the same thing happens when somebody writes you a 25-paragraph email. Do you feel like you've got to write them back a 25? I struggle with this. I get a lot of email from really nice people, and there's no way I could ever write that much. So you've got to find your comfort zone with this stuff. But being able to respond quickly and just kind of keep the ball in motion, keeping the ball in motion is very important. If you don't have enough information to respond to this right now, ask a question. Just keep things moving and get it out of your inbox. This one's thorny, but it's important, and this is the idea of deferring. If you're doing a quick check-in on your email and you're processing, there may be some things that you don't want to deal with right now, but you will want to deal with later. If there's stuff where you're going to need extra information before you can respond, you might want to put that into, personally, I put this into a to-respond folder, and then throughout the day, I go down and try to winnow that down so that I'm kind of hopefully trying to empty that by the end of every day. Don't always do it. But the idea is that your inbox really kind of should be for stuff you haven't read yet. I know that, again, advanced common sense, but there's a lot of you, probably a few of you, who have email in there that's read and you're not doing anything with. Well, you know, if you need, figure out what you need to get rid of it, and then do that and get it out of the way. And then finally, if there's something that you can do, this is so important, do it. Or capture a placeholder for that action of doing it. So what does that mean? If it's something I can do right now, if I can just go walk a folder down two cubes, go do it. You're done with it. Email is finished. But if it's something you can't do now, or shouldn't do now, or won't do now, what if it's a meeting in the future? Put it on your calendar. You would be amazed how many people decide what they're going to do today by looking at their inbox. Their inbox means this hasn't blown up yet. It means these are things I still feel bad enough about that I haven't put them in my trash can. As much as possible, liberate activity out of your inbox. I just cannot put this strongly enough. Keep a separate list for tasks. It doesn't matter what you're using. You guys don't have a task app yet. You need that. But you could use, you know, whatever. You could use Remember the Milk. You could use a Google Docs. I use text files to remember a lot of this stuff. But don't live out of your inbox, and don't use it as a to-do list, because that will make you crazy. I feel so strongly about this. There's one and only one thing you can do with each one of these, but the thing you don't do is just let it sit around without a reason, because that's when the procrastination starts. And as soon as you see, I don't know if you guys have ever dealt with clutter in your life, but it happens with clutter in the home too, where like one area you put down a jacket, and then pretty soon there's a pair of pants on it, and then there's Hulk number four, and there's some cord of wood, and like pretty soon that area is completely gone. The same is true here. If you keep your inbox tidy, you're going to respect it more. And in a certain way, that really says that you're respecting your time and attention and saying that I, as much as I loathe email, it's important enough to me that I take it a little bit more seriously. So one and only one. So like I say, last time I'll say this, this may not be your trip. Like, you're going to have to figure out what your... I think these are actually pretty sound. I think 80% of the DNA for most email systems is probably somewhere in here. But you need to figure this out for yourself. You have your own workflow. You got your own life. You got your own weird, peculiar habits you picked up in college. Honor that with my blessing. I think one of the most frustrating things about the life hacking movement, one of the things I find most vexing, is the implicit idea that acquiring a system is all you need to take care of a problem. To me, this is really not so much more sophisticated than thinking that you're going to be more organized because you got a PDA. Ultimately, whatever system, I happen to think the Inbox Zero system is very, I think it's pretty intuitive and easy to follow, but it's meaningless if you don't put it in place. The whole heart of life hacking comes down to one idea in my mind, and that's the idea that there's a really smart part of your brain and there's a really dumb part of your brain. And if you always let the smart part of your brain think that it's really smart and don't do anything to help the dumb part, you're going to be in a world of pain. To make the synaptic leap between the dumb part and the smart part is what a life hack is all about. And that's what really what this is. I haven't shown you anything here that you don't already know how to do, but if you actually do it, you're going to see extraordinary differences. The way that you have to make this happen, though, is you've got to make it a habit. You've got to have it be something that you do repeatedly. Otherwise, there's really not much worth to it at all. And I think one of the most healthy habits in the long run is that processing on a regular, as in repeating basis, gives you time to get out of email and go have a life somewhere else. So just to kind of put some of these tips in perspective and to give you some ways to help this stick, a couple quick tips. I think it's really important to do email less. And by that, I mean, don't leave email open. Do not leave auto check on. I know this sounds crazy. Consider turning off your email application sometimes and working on other stuff. If you're in customer service, you can't do that. If you're in a Korean missile silo, you can't do that. If you're the one who feeds and grooms the PageRank, you probably can't do that. But if you're like a normal person who has a job, there's a pretty good chance that you can shut your email off sometimes and let it accumulate for a while you go and work. Have you ever had this happen? You go on vacation and you come back and you got the 700 emails or whatever. And I'm always gobsmacked by how incredibly stupid most of my email is. But it seemed really important if I got a reminder after a minute. You know, I think mail.app, if you leave it in its default state, will remind you of new mail every minute. That's 2,400 interruptions a week. So it's worth figuring out how many of those interruptions you can really tolerate, given how important the news that we're having Sally's birthday at TGI Fridays is to you at a given time. I really feel like you want to schedule email dashes. My suggestion to you is that you try to check your email once per hour. And in that hour, go and check your email for 10 straight minutes, process it to zero, respond to what you can, close it up, and get back to work. Maybe that won't work for you. Maybe for you it's every 20 minutes. Try and get yourself onto some kind of a schedule where you're looking periodically enough that you're not going to lose your mind or have your boss think you're, you know, smoking weed under the desk. But as much as you can, try to shut off and get away from that. One thing you will immediately notice is that a lot of stuff seems less like a fire than it did when it was coming in all the time. And while we're at it, ditto for news feeds. If you have it in you to check a little bit less often, do a pass twice a day, you'll enjoy it more, and you'll get a lot more done. It is totally okay to cheat. The first cheat that is awesome is filtering. If there's any stuff that's coming in, I'm sure you guys are already doing this with all the lists and stuff that you're on, but if there's stuff that's low level, high noise, not important, I don't need to know this now stuff, filter it in such a way that it goes into a folder as being read. Give yourself a reminder to go check it once a day, once a week, or however often you need to check it. But there's no need to be notified of noisy stuff. If there's any way you can filter that stuff out, what can't you filter? You can't filter stuff that requires your brain to be engaged on an ongoing basis. Obviously, if it's like your primary project, you're not going to be able to filter that. Be careful that you don't overfilter, which I know Gmail will let you do. It's kind of like if you train Spam Assassin and it starts like throwing out your mom's emails, you know? You got to be careful about how much of this you try to automate, because you still do need your brain engaged with a lot of it. The other one, and I don't know if any of you kids work on the Gmail, but I love templates. I would love to see template functionality in Gmail. I currently use an application for mail.app called Mail Template. It makes it really easy to create custom templates that you can just respond super fast to email. If you start thinking in terms of templates, well, you guys are already thinking in templates in terms of the way you code things, right? You reuse libraries and stuff like that. If you discover that 80% of your email comes from the same 10 responses, consider automating that with a template, especially for stuff outside your team. It can really speed things up.
Can you use an example of that?
Yeah. I have a mail template where somebody, God bless them, asked me an incredibly obvious question about something that's on the site that was on the first response, first return in Google. So I'll go and I'll do the search on Google, and it goes to my clipboard, and then mail template, I'll respond to their email, and I've got a little international symbol for HTML, but it's got a little spot where it drops in whatever was in my clipboard. So it says, "Dear Jimmy, hey, thanks a lot for stopping by. I think you'll find what you're looking for here." Womp. And it drops in the clipboard. Could be FAQs, could be whatever, but it's sort of like you guys thinking about how you, I'll talk out of my butt for a minute, but thinking about how you refactor code and how you can reuse bits of stuff. Same thing here. If you discover you're answering the same thing over and over, try to automate it and keep it simple. And the other thing is, you know, I know you're like, you're whatever, like freaking Walt Whitman and everything, every word you write is a dream, and you would never think of boilerplate, but at least use it as a jumping off point. Like, consider at least having a little core of a one paragraph response if it's something you write a lot. Saves you a lot of time. And finally, try not to fiddle. Don't be that guy going up and down in the inbox just all day long, sitting there thinking about where you put stuff. Try to minimize any kind of activity that does not directly support creating and managing actions. If you're not actually getting that stuff done, you're not really doing work. You're just playing with email. Have you guys ever seen that movie Metropolis? The one from the 20s? There's this awesome scene in Metropolis where this German expressionist worker man is hooked up to the impossible to keep up with machine, and he has to keep turning the arms on this clock in this completely asinine scene. It's a hilarious, awesome scene. Well, I'm here to tell you, you know, if you don't want to be doing this all day long. They ain't hooked up to anything, right? If you're just doing meta work inside of email, you're not really getting stuff done. And so I think as much as possible, it's a good idea to kind of self-monitor and figure out what are the things I need to do that are going to keep me moving this stuff and let me create little email corpses out of these as quickly as possible. Try to stay with the program, get out of email as often as you can, and then just stay focused on managing action. And then, like I say, periodically, just give yourself a little check. And you know, remember when you felt guilty 20 minutes ago when I asked you how your actions track to your things you say are important? Try and do that once in a while and really say to yourself, am I putting my time and my attention where it should be right now? And is there a way that I can have this email become less noisy for me and generate more actions? And the irony, in my opinion, is that if you do this well, it actually becomes a little bit more like 1993, because you spend less time messing around with a lot of junk you don't care about and a lot more time doing the stuff that really matters to you. And that's a pretty good gig. Thanks. I deliberately tried to keep that short so that I hope we can have a discussion and chat and have questions, and you can tell me where I'm wrong. We got plenty of time. I'm just going to stand here until you guys answer questions, ask questions. So you can ask questions. You can tell me about what it's like to work at the Google and have a high volume of email. You can tell me, yes, sir.
So I really like the idea of only checking your email once every hour. But I think the problem is that everyone expects me to be checking it once every 30 seconds. And how do you get other people aware that you want to follow a system different from the system they expect you to do?
Yeah, it's absolutely the number one, you're right on. It's the number one response anybody would have to that seemingly crazy idea. And the truth is that a lot of it's going to depend on your teams, whoever it is you work with a lot. It's going to have a lot to do with how they think about this stuff and how the person who's in a position to evaluate you thinks about that stuff. But I think you might be surprised. You guys work in cubes, right? I mean, do you have to renegotiate every day how loud to play the music and whether you should eat a tamale? Like, you work it out, right? Don't you kind of figure out within your own little culture how that's going to work? I think one thing you can do is to say to each other, you see this happening now. Everybody talks about, like, oh, no email Fridays and stuff like that. Well, I don't know about that. But I do think that more and more people are having these conversations to at least say, hey, you know, anybody else feeling like our news groups have gotten kind of noisy? Anybody else kind of feel like, what if we were to say we check email like one day a week? Let's say we check email when we get in, we do a scrum or whatever, and then we kind of disappear for a couple hours. Who would have a problem with that, and what could we do to work around that? It's really, you know, I don't have, there's not one answer. But ultimately, you're identifying the more basic problem. You would never call somebody at their house at like 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. Not when I was a kid. It just wasn't done. But now, because your email's out there, people feel like they have unlimited access to you. So part of this, I think we're starting to see the pendulum swing back as we try to negotiate how much of ourselves we want to be available to people all the time, and how we maintain our sanity at those times when we need to not be getting new data. Yes, sir.
So addressing the previous point, if you don't set up an expectation that you will answer rapidly, it's amazing how much it affects how people try to use the email to get in contact with you. But my second question is, using the inbox as a to-do list, I have a tendency to do that because I don't have good tools for managing a to-do list outside of email. And what tools are out there that might actually integrate the to-do list with the scheduling of the time to do what's on the to-do list?
No, I think you're right on. And I mean, I think managing expectations, I learned this a long time ago when I was first a web designer. Back before we had interaction designers, we just had web designers. It was about $20,000 less. we only had 216 colors then. It was a different world. I learned early on, because I'm a sad, pathetic person, I always want to please people. And so I would way over deliver way early with clients. And man, would I ever regret it. I think you're absolutely right. I think people will take you more seriously if you do kind of establish. I mean, part of it is, like I say, it's team culture. I mean, in the same way that people sometimes say, oh, we got to get a wiki to help communicate better as a team. Or like, we know what our problem is, we need a new CMS. And you're like, no, you need to figure out how to talk to each other better. Like, this getting a CMS, now you got two problems, you know? I think that's a big part of it. To your point about where to put this stuff, it's my feeling, and again, this comes straight out of Getting Things Done, great book. I think the idea of understanding that it's all about managing action means you take it seriously enough that you park actions someplace special. One thing that's important to me, I think, is the idea that whatever I accept as an action, whatever goes on to my list, and that could be a text file, that could be something like Remember the Milk, it could be Ta-Da list, there's a lot of electronic ways, could be a Moleskine notebook, but whatever it is you put on that list has a certain kind of almost magic to it, because the act of committing that to your page is your way of saying, this isn't just a good idea, this is something that I'm going to do. And I think one of the distinctions about understanding processing has everything to do with task lists as well. The reason to-do lists don't work is because there's no skin in the game. To-do lists are great. Everybody in here could make a list right now, a great to-do list. Because really, most people's to-do lists are about collection, capture, they're about anxiety. It's about what's top of mind right now goes on the list. Retirement, lumps, and all this stuff goes on a list. And now you've made a list. Awesome. You made a list. And the list could include vacation to Paris, pick up milk, buy diapers. And it's like, whoa, the content types are crazy here. And these are all different sizes and shapes. The only way to make a task list that really means anything is to kind of try to make those roughly the same shape and to make them all kind of have a certain amount of decisiveness about it. So whatever you use, you know, I think for most of you, a text file could be all you need. One thing about geeks, in my experience, is that they don't have a lot of what David Allen calls contexts, or a lot of different sets of tools and opportunities. You know, at computer is pretty much it. And so for a lot of us, that could be a text file. All I would say is whatever you choose, choose the tool that stops just short of being fun to use. If it's too fun to use, you're gonna fiddle, and you're gonna be like the guy with the clock again. Like, keep it to where you kind of don't love using it. and where you don't become so concerned with the taxonomy. Every time you start thinking about taxonomy, go do three tasks. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if that answers your question. It depends. A lot of people, I think it would be a great thing for Google to make. I could totally see this being integrated with Google Calendar at some point. I know none of you are in a position to say, you can't even tell me how your subversion works, I know. But I think in the future, that'd be a great thing for Google to add, some kind of task management. But personally, I like something that I can take on a plane. You know what I mean? The whole like wired thing is problematic for me. I'm sure you guys got a solution that's gonna get my personal information, but I think having I think there's nothing wrong with having a sheet of paper. I can't, like, you do not believe how many friends of mine, especially friends I know who work here, walk around with a pad of paper. They write things down and then they cross it off. You got ubiquitous capture, you know, no batteries run down. I personally carry around a stack of index cards to write things down. Whatever works for you. Yeah, but having the tasks, the main thing is that it's important to be able to capture them when they're on your mind. As I like to say, the time that you remember that you're out of toilet paper tends not to be when you're at Safeway in the toilet paper aisle. And so you need a capture device that's going to be widely available, but then you're going to want to have recall at the point when you can do something about it. So whatever system does that for you. Where's the mic? Yeah.
Hi. Hey. Well, now that you just got done talking about how great text files and pieces of paper are, I wanted to ask you about your opinion on the state of GTD apps. You mentioned OmniFocus, which I've tried and haven't really gotten too involved with. I can't quite figure it out. Could you just tell me?
I'll put that as a bug. Yeah.
Thanks. Can you just tell me what you think about them? Yeah. And what's their value?
That's a fantastic question. He's asking about the state of GTD apps. When I started 43 Folders in 2004, wow, apparently I'm 40, there was not much in the way of GTD apps, especially for Mac users. And I kind of, at the time, was very like, there should be GTD applications. And now, brother, are there ever GTD applications? So many. I think the failing of a lot, not the failing, but the challenge of GTD is I'm sorry to go on about this for those of you who are already sick of GTD, which I can understand. But part of the beauty of GTD is that it's such a tool agnostic framework. And part of the challenge and the wonder of GTD is that it's applicable in so many situations. I think one problem with a lot of applications is they try too hard to be an all-in-one GTD application. And that especially tends to fall down in the review process, which is the most critical part of keeping GTD working on an ongoing basis. Just like your filters for email shouldn't try to do the thinking for you, I would try to avoid any GTD application that tries to do too much thinking for you. I think you want to be looking for an application. This isn't limited to just GTD. It's true for any task management applications. You want something that's, where it's easy to capture in a way that's seamless and doesn't require you to change modes. That, I would say that's important. You need a way to kind of put it into the most basic categories that allow you to contextually have tasks when you can do something about them. And you need a way to afford reviews. They can't do the reviews for you, and I think that's a problem with some of them. I was talking at lunch today, actually, about one thing that's neat about Unix. I mean, as little as I really understand about Unix, I do understand the idea of pipes. And I love the idea that tiny applications can do things together. And in some cases, I want the really sharp paring knife. I don't want the goofy Swiss Army knife that came out of the bubblegum machine. I want the one super frickin' hot, sharp paring knife to do this one thing. And that's why I think the beauty of this is you can do capture on paper, right? And you can do task tracking electronically. And you can do your reviews, you know, on a whiteboard. Whatever works for you in the way that whatever compensatory muscles you need to develop to keep your brain upright, you can cobble together a system that'll do that for you.
Merlin. So if you come back from vacation and you have a big pile, here I am.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Or, you know, Monday and there's the medium-sized pile. What's your thinking about the order in which you should process the mail? Should it be, you know, chronological? Should it be alphabetical?
This is one of those VI Emacs kind of things. Because there's the conventional wisdom is you cherry pick for the stuff that's highest priority. And there's nothing I can say to you that will keep you from doing that. Because that's how our brain works, and you guys are all smarter than me. I can't talk you out of that. But as much as possible, I think I try to go latest to most recent in order. And I think once you've made the psychic leap from I have to respond to all these to I have to process these, that becomes less painful. Because once you become a total ninja at processing, and this is where something like MUT or something becomes, you know, if you can have key commands for doing these kinds of tasks, it's hugely helpful. Mail Acton for mail.app, great for stuff like this. That ability to just blaze through it really quickly, you've taken down the ramp up to that, right? Because ordinarily you feel like, oh gosh, it's Monday, I've got to go run and put out my fires. But you can do that, but as long as you don't do it to the exclusion of the other stuff. How do you do it?
So So I think I try and get rid of the junk first and then see what's left.
I think that's brilliant. I think that...
Thanks.
I think that, and I'll tell you why. Sure, it's funny. But the... But what you're doing is a pattern. And you say, oh, throw out junk, no duh. Well, that's a pattern that you can extend a long way. That pattern of, okay, I immediately see that this is stuff I can get rid of. Taking that and extending that to, okay, and here's stuff that I don't need to do now that I can do later, or here's things that I know I need to do this about. But you're making these very fast in the moment decisions. And once you get good at this stuff, indicating, any of those five steps should come to you very quickly because you know where it goes. Deleting's easy because you know it just goes away. If you can't make decisions as quickly as you delete, it's because you don't know where stuff should go. And that's the missing part in your system. Maybe. Yes, you, sir.
So, a related question. If you're a very bad boy, and you have a large inbox dating back, many months, what would you do if you found yourself, or years, if you found yourself in such a situation? Including, like, letters from friends who you feel really guilty for not having responded.
Hypothetically, if you have been letting, so I'm assuming this is a live email account that's checked all the time. Okay. There's a difference versus having email checks accounts you only check periodically. But if it's something where that attrition has been happening over time and it's been piling up, I'll tell you the very first thing I would do. I tell people to create something that I call the email DMZ. So the first thing you need to do is to stop sucking. Like, before you get good, you have to stop sucking. So first of all, go make a folder called DMZ and drag every one of those emails into that folder and then stop doing that. That's my first thing. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, so, but a lot, I say that to people and they're like, well, yeah, but I still got all that email. I'm like, yeah, but if you had done that 6 months ago, you would have 6 months less of stuff that had piled up. So number one, clear out your inbox, give yourself a fresh start, and put that into a folder. You still have to go through all that email, which you can do in dashes. But that's the first thing that I would do. There's been a lot of talk lately about email bankruptcy and the idea of basically BCCing everybody you know and saying, that's it, new dealer, I'm done. If it's really important, call me. See, suck it, I'm out of here. That's hard to do, and in a company that would probably be really hard to do. But I think it helps to give how can I put this? If it was easy for you to answer those, you already would have answered them. If that was something that you could do in your head, if that's something you could do in 5 minutes, you already would have done it. You've got to be honest with yourself. You don't get an empty inbox by living a lie. You've got to start by being really honest with yourself. So if you know you're never going to respond to some email, even if it's somebody that you love, 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 delete it. What are you going to do instead? Keep it for 6 months and then delete it? Oh, well, that's awesome. They probably feel great, you know? If you're going to answer it now. I mean, I don't mean to get all, like, kung fu on you, but I mean, like, that's what you got to do. What you could do, I mean, there's all kinds of, this is how pathetic I am. There's all kinds of little tricks you could do. Like, you could go in there and take it from a slightly different point of view and say, of the people in here, all those friends and all those babies that have been born and all those birthdays that went by, what would make me feel great? Which one of these people would I actually really like to connect with? So instead of thinking of it as this deficit that makes you feel terrible, try to think of it as like, if I could reach out to one person and feel really energized by writing to them, start there. Yes. Hey.
So one of the issues that many of us here have is it seems like your system would work really well on a personal account, but with a work account, frequently somebody will email your team. And now there are, you know, maybe 20 people that could respond to this issue. So you might look at the email and you might say, well, I could respond or I could wait for one of the other 20 people to respond.
Right.
And so you ignore it for an hour or two. And then you come back to it later and you say, mm-hmm. Oh, did anyone respond yet? Maybe Do I want to respond now? And so do you have any suggestions for playing this little waiting game with your teammates?
Well, two things. Well, first of all, it's a trick question because... You know, if the practice of your group is to have stuff generically go out to 20 people and hope someone takes care of it, there's a part of that workflow that makes me think that could probably be tuned a little bit. I would suggest something like bug tracking or something like that. But no, but seriously, I mean, you're right. I mean, but how can I put this? I mean, my friend Jeff Veen used to talk about this all the time. You know, people come in, they come to your, they go, oh, we got to get a CMS, we got to get a this, we got to get a that. Here's this thing I read about in the InFlight magazine that's going to make our company really great. And the trouble is the technology is going to do your bidding, but it's not going to fix communication problems or broken practices. That said, there are ways that you could probably do it. There's tend to be one or two people that actually do the work, or does it get widely distributed? That went out to 20 people.
It depends on the question. Whoever can answer the question answers it.
Right.
Sometimes you have to wait for someone else.
And so you see, if they, when they respond to that, that could CC'd everybody in the group, and you would know that it got answered.
Yep.
So the whole time, you're just kind of sitting there going, like, who's it going to be? Wow, that's wild. It's a good question. I mean, that sounds like kind of a practice that you guys could talk. Seems like you could talk a little bit to clean that up a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, I would have to think that something like bug tracking would be better for something like that. But it gives me a chance to say one thing. There are some problems that can't be fixed by email, and there's some problems where email. How can I put this? Email, you know, is just the canary in the coal mine. You feel the pain in that place. In the inbox, but by the way, you can read more about this stuff at inboxzero.com. It redirects to a 43-folder series that contains a bunch of this crap. But what do you do with somebody who keeps sending you junk, for example? This is, I mean, in some ways, this is somewhat related to that. Like, you get the aunt that keeps sending you the urban myths and the $200 cookie and all that stuff. And you just keep sending them the Snopes links, but they keep sending you, you know, the stuff. There's some stuff where you've really just got to, you've either got to procmail them or you've got to talk to them. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like there's all kinds of problems that you could at least start to say, hey, does anybody else see this as something that we could work on? I don't know. What do you guys think? Is what he's describing a big Google-wide problem? You know, it's like the FBI is here. People are shooting this entire thing. This is all being recorded. No, seriously, but is that a widespread problem, not knowing who's going to handle something sent to distribution? Who's got the best solution for it here? Yeah.
I'd still just do it like you recommended. If it's a 2 minute or less response, just do it. And if not, put it in your response folder. And then when you get around to it, when you have time to process that folder, maybe somebody's already responded and you have nothing to do. Otherwise, it's your turn.
Does getting good about responding to that harm you in the long run? Do you become the go-to person? And is that a good thing or bad thing?
The problem with responding like immediately in 2 minutes is then the person that sent the email gets three responses all simultaneously two minutes from when they sent it. So there is some advantage to waiting, just
see what happens
to prevent everyone from responding simultaneously.
Yeah.
What worked once was like we have a team of at least 4 or 5 people, and every day you designate one that will not answer, but
so it becomes a little bit like reverse office hours. Like there's like you have a time when you're not responding.
Somebody has to manage. Usually it was the manager who went to meetings. And if at Google, for there is no manager, who can possibly do that? There's 50 people underneath. And then the teams have to do it and on a peer-to-peer basis. So manage.
Oh, then I'm interested in hearing more about that. Though that's a tough question. And I'm just curious though. I know sometimes you guys try to squash the myth, but show of hands, emails that come from a Google address that you receive every day, in your estimation, 100?
Filtered or not?
Raw. Like you come in, you turn on your computer. If you had nothing in place, how many Google emails would be in your inbox? Somebody toss out how much? 200? 500? Anybody more than 500? But it's more than 500. Some of you are getting more than 500 emails. Whatever helps. I would really want to ask what I get out of people getting 600 emails a day. And how many of them are actionable? What percentage of your emails are actionable? Require you to do something other than read them and file them? 1 to 5%, 2%? Hey, how's it going? Wow, that's extraordinary. If I was Mr. Google, I would want to ask a lot of questions. That's extraordinary. Well, more question? Yeah.
Actually, just an announcement, but not to finish the questions. Many of you know this, but I wanted to mention that we do bring the David Allen Company here to do Getting Things Done courses on a regular basis. So if any of you have not taken it or you've studied GTD before and you want a refresher, you're absolutely welcome to enroll for a class. In fact, we have them going this Thursday and Friday. I know it's last minute, but we do have some seats. It's a one-day class. We offer it across two half days, so two morning sessions or two afternoon. You can enroll by going to go/GTDW. So just wanted to mention that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. I know Ev took the blogger team to that a while back. I guess this is a plug, so I'll call it a plug. That's a heck of a seminar. It's funny, one thing people always ask is how do you do GTD on Teams? And the truth is it can be pretty hard to like make anybody do anything like that, but it's kind of this object-oriented productivity approach where if everybody has responsible, if their little black box is responsible about input and output, it kind of makes things a little healthier. That's cool that you do that. We've probably got time for one more question. Anybody else? I'll hang around after if anybody wants to say hey or whatever. But one more question? Come on, make me feel good. Ask a question. Yeah.
Just to like, just to bother checking every single email, like literally clicking the box, is more pain than I can bear. And I think the problem we have at Google is that we have an internal RSS reader, but a lot of stuff that probably could be on blogs, like we're just used to doing it on mailing lists. And so your mailing lists are kind of this knowledge archive fire hose type thing.
Yeah.
So do you have any techniques for dealing with like the knowledge fire hose that email sort of proxies
that's
for?
That's really interesting. As you were speaking, I started to think there was an article I read in the probably in the early 90s that was comparing, talking about Macs and Windows, I guess it was the mid 90s, comparing Macs and Windows and saying that Windows was very Protestant and Mac was very Catholic. It seems like you need almost like an information priest. It sounds like for like some of these problems, you need sectional representatives who are helping to digest this and then share the really relevant parts of it. If there's stuff where not everybody needs to know about it, that's a fire hose. That's crazy. And again, I mean, blaming email is, that's just kind of blaming the messenger. It sounds like that's one thing that might be helpful. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, sometimes I've thought that Google relies on randomness to make sure that the information gets to the right person. It's kind of like a redundant random graph, and like it might or might not flow. You hope for the best.
Really? So like they just throw it all out there and kind of hope it sticks.
Well, like you're talking to somebody at lunch and they're like, oh, you're doing that project? Have you heard of the person in New York who's doing a very similar project? No. No, I haven't.
Well, Google, home of the random information splatter. Hey, so I have been Merlin, and this has been Inbox Zero, and thank you very much to Dick in particular for having me in today. Thanks to everybody. I'll hang out. Thank you. Thanks again to Google for having me in to visit, and thanks to you for listening. To learn more about Inbox Zero and to view the slides and a full-length Google video of this presentation, please visit inboxzero.com. This has been Inbox Zero Tech Talk. And until next time, I'll see you in cyberspace.